ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, called Rahugana Converses with Jada Bharata. This is text number 15. Please repeat, Sa Mam Smritir Mrigadehe Api Vira Krishnarchana Prabhava No Jahati अथो अहम् जनसंगाद् असंगो विशंकमानो विवृतश् चरामि समाम स्मृतिर् मृगदेहे पिवीरा कृष्णार्चना प्रभवानो जहाति अथो अहम् जनसंगादसंगो विशंकमानो वृवितश्चरामि सा दैट माम मी स्मृति रिमेम्बरेंस ऑफ द एक्टिविटीज ऑफ माय प्रीवियस लाइफ मृगदेहे In the body of a deer. Api, although. Vira, O great hero. Krishna Archana Prabhava, which appeared because of the influence of sincere service to Krishna. No Jahati, did not leave. Atho, Therefore, aham, I, jana sangat, from the association of ordinary men, asanga, completely detached, vishankamana, being afraid, avivrita, unobserved by others, charami, I go here and there. Translation and Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. My dear heroic king, due to my past sincere service to the Lord, I could remember everything of my past life even while in the body of a deer. Because I am aware of the fall down in my past life, I always keep myself separate from the association of ordinary men. Being afraid of their bad materialistic association, I wander alone, unnoticed by others. Please repeat. My dear heroic king, due to my past sincere service to the Lord, I could remember everything of my past life, even while in the body of a deer. Because I am aware of the fall down in my past life, I always keep myself separate from the association of ordinary men. Being afraid of their bad materialistic association, I wander alone, unnoticed by others. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. It is certainly a great fall to go from human life to animal life. But in the case of Bharat Maharaj or any devotee, devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram. At the end of death, at the time of death, by nature's law, the mind is absorbed in a certain type of thinking. This may lead one to animal life. Yet for a devotee there is no loss. Even though Bharat Maharaj received the body of a deer, he didn't forget his position, Consequently, in the body of a deer, he was very careful to remember the cause of his downfall. As a result, he was given a chance to be born in a family of very pure brahmanas. Thus, his service to the Lord never went in vain. Om jnana timirandhasya jnana anjana shalaka chakshurun miritam jena tasmai shri gurave namah. So here, Jadbharata is telling his story of fall down to Maharaj Rahugana. Now, a couple things to note here before we get into the topic of the verse. Jadbharata, he's behaving like an avadhuta, right? He's completely, this is why he's called Jada, because Jada means someone who's deaf and mute, who doesn't hear anything, who doesn't speak, who's basically inert. The word jada means inert, so disconnected from the world. So he's behaving like that in the footsteps of his father from his previous life, who was Maharaj Rishabha, right, Rishabdev, who also took this sort of renunciation where he gave up the world. But there are a couple things that are interesting here in this account of Jadbharata, is that despite the fact that to the whole world he presented himself as completely foolish, stupid, illiterate, dumb, whatever, however you might think of it, but society thought of him as very useless. Right? Even though he presented himself like that to everyone, and even though he spent all of his time basically alone, right? He didn't want to associate with anyone else. But there's two things that he's doing here. Number one, he's praising the association of devotees. As we've seen a few verses before, he said, Mahat Pada Rajobhishekam, right? The only solution to everything is to get the dust from the feet of the devotees. In the next verse, as we'll read tomorrow, he also says in very strong words that we need to associate with devotees. So, in other words, his isolation from the world is only isolation from those who are materialistic and will deter him from his spiritual life, not pure isolation. That complete isolation is not something that a devotee aspires for or finds any pleasure in. Although there are other spiritual processes where people try to that sort of thing. It's called kaivalya, or pure isolation. But that's not a goal for devotees. In fact, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they say, kaivalya narakayate. Right? Kaivalya is like naraka. It's like that isolation or that separateness is like a hell for a devotee, naraka. So he's praising the association of devotees. The other thing he's doing is that he emerges from his inert state, his apparently inert state, this jada state, to speak to Rahugana, to speak to a king. Which is, again, very unusual, because he just said that he tries to avoid the association of materialistic people. Right? And we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finds a king to be among the most materialistic people that you can come across, because they're always involved in the pursuit of power and pleasure and all kinds of material enjoyment. But Jadabharata is giving up his determination or his vow to stay away from the world, right, to disconnect himself from the world, as he's saying here, jana sangat asango, right, rejecting sangha. And he gives up his vow just to talk to King Rahugana. In other words, another quality of a devotee is that he never lets go of a good preaching opportunity. Right? He saw basically that here's someone with potential. Not everyone he regarded as having potential. We know just before this there was a story of him meeting the worshippers of Kali. Right? And there he maintained his inert state. Right? When it came to his protection, he found no reason to speak up to protect his own body. That was sort of a minor point for him. And these people he didn't find to be very conducive to reform. So he just maintained his jada state, and goddess Kali herself came to his defense. But in this case, he could have very well done the same thing, right? Whatever punishment the king would have given him, it would have been more civilized than the punishment he was facing from those Kali worshippers. Even if he got the death penalty from the king, it would have been in a slightly more civilized way. So he didn't face any particular danger with the king. There was no material reason to speak up. The only reason he spoke up in this situation was because he saw an opportunity to reform someone. He saw an opportunity to convey Krishna consciousness to someone here. He saw in the king a spark that he could fan, a spiritual spark. And that conversation has wound its way through several chapters now. It's a long account. It goes on for another couple chapters. And it begins very much in the mode of Bhagavad Gita discussion. He says, Rahugana says, you know, in the sarcastic way, basically. He says, you're fat and you're unintelligent, you're stupid, you're not very strong. He just insults him in a variety of ways. And Rahugana, instead of getting upset, he turns around and says, look, you're in the bodily concept. You're thinking you're this particular body. But actually, fatness and thinness and beauty and ugliness and all these things don't relate to us. And in fact, we don't even suffer any pain. And then Rahugana turns around and says, no, that doesn't make any sense. Because when my body suffers, I suffer. I have this experience, right? The soul must be suffering because I'm suffering. And then Rahugana says, okay, let me explain this a little bit better. And so he goes into the whole psychology of the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and why it is that we feel that we're suffering even though actually we're not. But that whole discussion of Sankhya, mind, intelligence, ego, different elements, gets way too complicated. And so at the end of the previous chapter, Maharaj Rahugana says, look, this is... All I can figure out so far is that you're an amazing person. And clearly, you're not who you are pretending to be. There's more substance here than I can ascertain. So tell me who you are, and whatever you're saying, please say it in more simple terms. So he's like Arjun, you know, he tells him, actually, I think you're contradicting yourself. You said this, and then you said that. Very much like Arjun does in Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes he says, I'm confused, Krishna, I don't understand. Sometimes he says, you're contradicting yourself. Right? Please explain again. And Krishna, like a patient teacher, like Jad Bharata, he comes around and says, okay, let me explain again. But this time he explains by telling his own story. Right? He now reveals himself for the first time. After two or three chapters of conversation, Jad Bharata is now telling Rahugana who he really is. And in order to tell him that, he's telling him his story of fall down. This is how I fell. This is what I was. This is how I fell. This is what I am now. And this is what I hope to be in the future. Now, if you think about it from Jad Bharata's perspective, this, from an ordinary perspective, it can be quite an embarrassing thing to talk about our story of fall down. Fall downs tend to be embarrassing things. We undergo it and we try to keep it from as many ears and eyes as possible to recover from it as quickly and hope that no one notices that we went through a difficult period or we have a fall down or whatever. It's an embarrassing thing to fall down. And here Jad Bharata is making quite a... reaching out in quite a significant way by openly conveying his story of fall down. That this is who I was and what I could have become, and this is why what I ended up because of this fault of mine. So he's revealing himself quite a bit to Maharaj Rahugana. And as we'll see, this will be a turning point in the conversation. Maharaj Rahugana sort of becomes more and more convinced as a result of hearing this story. Now, if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam as a whole, you find that the entire Bhagavatam, not the entire, but a lot of Srimad Bhagavatam is basically the story of fall downs, one after another, after another. Everywhere you look in the text, it's stories of fall down. The story of Jad Bharata, it goes on for several chapters, of course. But also the story of Ajamila, in sixth canto, of someone who was a very, very pure Brahman, and because of some weakness, he fell down, and fell down quite hard before he was given a second chance. There's the story of Nalakuvara and Manigriva from canto 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, who were the sons of demigods, quite advanced in culture and heritage, and they fell down because of misbehaving in front of a devotee. There's the story of Sobhari Muni. You know this story? He was meditating underwater for a long time as a way to avoid the world. This Janasangada Sango, right, giving up all bad association. And he ended up seeing two fish mating in the water and became all confused and fell down as came out of the water and got married. You have the story of Jaya and Vijaya, perhaps the most spectacular fall down story in Srimad Bhagavatam, because he falls down they fall down from a very high platform. Jada Bharata, he's quite advanced, right? He's on the platform of bhava, there's tears flowing from his eyes, and he's very fixed in bhakti. But Jaya and Vijaya are already in the spiritual world, and they come down here to the material world. Everyone falls down for different reasons and under different circumstances, but if you look at the story of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a story of repeated attempts and repeated failures and then repeated attempts again and again and again and again. In the story of Jaya and Vijaya, you see really a wonderful account of how Krishna, he understands a devotee's weakness or a devotee's mistake, right, an accidental fall down of some kind, and how he responds to it. When the four Kumaras, they came up to see the Lord in Vaikuntha, they were stopped by Jaya and Vijaya, these two doorkeepers. And Jaya and Vijaya were not really at fault, a little bit, but basically it was a case of them getting confused, of not recognizing. It was four little children. So normally sages don't appear in the bodies of children. Sages, you think long beard and very old and someone who looks wise. But these are four little kids scampering in, basically. They're 5 years old, that's it. And so it was a case of genuine confusion. And the way you know it was genuine, the mistake, that they weren't intending to be arrogant in front of them, was that as soon as they got a clue that these were sages, right, as soon as they opened their mouth, basically, they understood, oh, these are sages. They immediately dropped their weapons and fell at their feet and said, please, please forgive. We really got confused. Right, so that sort of immediate turnaround, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, he says is a mark of an accidental fall down. It's a mark that it was an accident. They didn't really mean to hurt them, but they did it somehow. So they turned around just like that. It didn't take them a minute to take a humble pose in front of them. And when the Kumaras started cursing Jaya and Vijaya, it's at that point that Lord Vishnu emerges. He comes running to the door, to the gate. The Kumaras were coming to see him. Lord Vishnu hadn't come yet. But when his two devotees were in danger of falling, of getting cursed, then the Lord became very concerned, and he came running. He came very, very fast. Bhagavatam says that he came barefoot. The Lord came on foot and barefoot. And the Acharyas, they comment on this point, that the Lord was in so much of a rush that he didn't bother to come on the back of Garuda. Right? He didn't bother to take his ride. He just ran, as he was. Right? Forgot his shoes and just ran. Because he was so worried that his devotees are going to undergo some tribulation here. And then when he meets the Kumaras in Jaya, when he arrives at the scene, the Kumaras, of course, have a beautiful darshan. But then the Lord apologizes on behalf of his servants. And he says, you know, you brahmanas are like my own self, and you're to be revered, and I'm very sorry. And he says, whatever punishment you want to give them, you're welcome to. I'm even willing, he says, to cut off an arm and a leg for you. Right? I'm willing to cut off an arm and a leg for you. And it's very interesting what he says there, because although he's saying on one hand that you're the greatest, he's telling the Kumaras, I'm willing to do whatever you want. I'm willing to do whatever you want. But he's saying, I'm willing to cut off an arm and a leg for you if that's what you want. What's the arm and leg in this case? Jay and Vijay. Right? He's basically telling them, look, by cursing these two devotees of mine, you're cutting off my arm and my leg. Right? I'm willing to give this to you if this is what you want, right? Because I consider brahmanas to be worshipable. But this is what you're asking of me. Right? You're removing the limbs of my body by taking my two right-hand, left-hand men and sending them down to the material world. The Lord is very, very concerned about Jay and Vijay's fall down. He's not taking it lightly. He begs for their forgiveness. He says, okay, you can do what you want, but I'm very, very sorry. And then the last point is that the four Kumaras, if you notice, they never actually enter the spiritual world. They have, the Lord comes to the gate, they have darshan of the Lord, and then they turn around, go home, the Lord turns around, goes home, and Jay and Vijay fall to the material world. And the whole scene takes place outside the seventh doorway to Vaikuntha. And again, the Acharyas comment that the four Kumaras, because of their impersonalistic tendencies, which of course were cured once they saw the Lord, but because of their impersonalist tendencies and because of their anger towards a devotee, they couldn't actually enter the spiritual world. They just stayed at the doorway. And they got the Lord's association, especially really because of Jay and Vijay, right? Because the Lord was so concerned to protect his devotees. So in this, we see what Prabhupada is talking about in this purport, right? That what happens in the case of a fall down of a devotee, how he's quoting Bhagavad Gita, svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat, right? That the Lord never lets go of his devotee. He never says, well, okay, you know, so long and good luck. Right? We'll see you later. No, he's very, very concerned that what's going to happen to my devotee. And so he protects the devotee. He's the backup plan. He catches on. Like a computer, how many of you have experienced a hard drive crash and losing files? Fairly common scenario. And we all know it's going to happen one day, right? What percentage of the world's computers crash eventually? It's 100%, right? All computers will crash. No computer will ever last forever. And we all know that. And so we always get encouraged, make a backup, put it somewhere else, put it in two or three different places, right, in order to protect. So devotional service has this backup plan inbuilt in it. Right? It's not a sort of a free fall. It's like rock climbing. Yes, it's very difficult. Spiritual life is a great struggle. Or like the Upanishads say, it's like walking on a razor's edge, you know. But the rock climber always has something drilled into the rock, a hook or something like that, to catch them, because occasionally they slip. In fact, any rock climber in their career is going to slip at some point. Right? But that string catches them, that rope holds on to them until they can get help. In the next week or so, ABC News in the United States is going to air live a man walking on a 2-inch rope across Niagara Falls. You know Niagara Falls? It's the most powerful falls that in North America, basically, in terms of volume of water. Very, very devastating. And he's stringing from one end to the other across the falls, right, and walking. But the key thing is, there's no net, right? There's no backup. In other words, this is being filmed live. There's a potential that he could be dead on live television, right? Because there's no backup. There's no. So, spiritual life is, Krishna always gives us a backup plan, right? He's always there as sort of the backup in case anything goes wrong. And you'll see that a devotee's attitude to fall down is marked by two qualities, and Jada Bharata displays both here. On the one hand, a devotee has a very strong confidence in the infallible nature of his backup. A very strong confidence that Krishna will always be there to protect me, no matter what. Rakshishyati iti vishvasaha. The firm conviction that Krishna will protect me. That's one of the six limbs of surrender. So on the one hand, the devotee has that firm conviction, Krishna will protect me. On the other hand, that conviction is paired with a very, shall we say, healthy skepticism of his own abilities. A devotee is always a little bit skeptical or not so confident about his or her own strength, his or her own ability to make it across that rope without falling. So never so brash like that tightrope walker across Niagara Falls to say, I'm going to get across and I need no backup. So both of these things are held together. You see, on the one hand, Jada Bharata, he's completely confident that Krishna will protect me. When the worshippers of Kali come, he's not afraid. Krishna is there. Krishna will help me. He's so kind, he let me remember my past life, even as a deer. So that conviction is there. On the other hand, you see his skepticism in this verse about his own abilities. He says, I completely stay away from the association of anyone else. Right? This little bit of fear that I don't want to get stuck again. I don't want to get entangled again. Not this time around. Right? I've had to go through two extra lives. Not this time around. I'm not going to get caught up. When either one of these sort of facets is not there, then fall down becomes very risky. It becomes a very difficult situation, and then it can be quite damaging. But if both of these aspects are there, then fall down will still happen, but it won't be such a devastating occurrence for a devotee. My spiritual master, Hanumat Preshaka Swami, he always says that it's not a question of if you'll fall down, but what will you do? How will you pick yourself up? When you do fall down. In other words, what's our contingency plan? It's good to make a contingency plan. Just like when you fly in an airplane, they always say, in the event of a water landing, right? Here, it's very funny wording, right? Because in the event of a water landing, why would you land on water? But of course, it's too difficult to say, in the event of we're crash into the ocean. So they say a water landing, as if we're equipped to land on water. But anyhow, they say, in the event of a water landing, right? Or they say, although it's unlikely, right? In the event of a loss of cabin pressure, right? Oxygen mass will automatically fall out or deploy, whatever they say, from the top, right? And put on your mass, etc. So that contingency plan is in place. In spiritual life, why not also have a contingency plan? Why not also plan for something that is very likely in some sense. From Bhagavatam, we definitely get the idea that it's likely. Only very rarely does things happen so, Krishna is so kind that we get through unscathed. But in Bhagavatam, you see the best and the brightest falling. So why not make our own plan? Okay, should this happen, then the minute I get my senses back, then what am I going to do? What's my plan? And how am I going to get up with a lot of flourish and enthusiasm and continue walking? My spiritual master has this document he puts on his website in which he explains his own position to his disciples before initiation or if they're ever interested later on. And in that, he says something which I found at first very shocking and then incredibly reassuring, where he says, chances are very good that we will fall from the spiritual path. But when we do, we plan to get up in a most wonderful way and continue our devotional service. If Krishna is very, very, very kind to us, then somehow we might get through this life without falling down. But we have a plan in mind in case we don't. A very straightforward, very honest way to present his own position. A devotee maintains that kind of healthy skepticism about his own abilities, while at the same time maintaining complete confidence in the Lord's protection. And these two things serve a devotee very well to protect them, right, in the event of a fall down. So the story of Jad Bharata brings a very sort of powerful lesson to mind in terms of, you know, the fear that all of us have inside, what would happen if something like this were to happen. Right? And we see with Jad Bharata how honest he is about his situation and how in some sense unembarrassed he is. Right? He sort of understands this is what happened and this is why it happened and here was my fault and this is how Krishna protected me and this is why I'm very grateful for that sort of thing. And then the one bit of advice that he gives in order to avoid it. Because clearly, even though it's something that may in all likelihood happen at some point in life, it's not something that we should look forward to. It's something that we need to avoid, right? We need to do our best. Because there's also a chance that we can scrape by without falling. And so how do we do that? And this verse, as well as the following, give us the best piece of advice. He says, jana sangat asango, giving up the attachment to the association of worldly people. And the next verse saying, taking up the association of devotees. Same thing as Rupa Goswami says, utsaha nishchaya dherya tat tat karma pravartana, sanga tyagat sato vitte, shadbir bhakti prasidyati. Giving up negative association and taking up positive association. These two things put together. The word he says for giving up that association, he says, is asanga, giving up attachment. So association means attachment. Attachment, when we, I mean, one way I look at it in terms of trying to say, okay, when am I associating too much with those who are materialistic, is basically to say, when I start enjoying their company, right, it's a source of pleasure, then you know, okay, I'm associating. Right? That means real association. Coming in contact is something we have to do. Right? That's part of our service as devotees. Even Jad Bharata is doing that. Right? He's contacting, talking to a rather materialistic person. So that's our service as devotees, and maybe as having jobs or working outside or being grihasthas or so many things. Right? That association, that contact is something that's inevitable. But when we start enjoying that association, that's when we have to be very, very careful. Right? When their company starts to be something that's, oh, this is quite nice. Right? I don't know, this is pretty good. And it's a very subtle, you start looking forward to that, right? Something that, it becomes attractive. And as soon as it becomes attractive, dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama. Then as soon as it starts becoming attractive, then it becomes attachment. And then we've got a problem. Right? But otherwise, that contact is not a problem as long as we do it in the manner of Jad Bharata. We do it with a purpose. We should find our pleasure in the association of devotees. That's the key thing. So I will stop here and see if there are any questions or comments at this point. Yes, Prabhu. Definitely. Right. Okay, if I can just respond to that real quick. That's very, it's a good point. A couple things. One, you find that, yes, it takes time in order to become comfortable with that past or that history without feeling all those emotions so in such a raw way again. The second thing is that Jad Bharata is not publicly proclaiming his fall down. Right? He's not going around advertising it. To the general public, he's not saying anything. He's maintaining silence. But when he finds it appropriate as a teaching opportunity, as a teaching moment, then he reveals his mind. Right? So again, the point here is not that a fall down is something that we have to sort of, Skype about or Google about or Facebook about. That's not the point here. The point is that he's comfortable enough with it to use it as a teaching opportunity, right? And it shows his own maturity in being able to have resolved that. Yes, I went through this. Yes, there was my fault there. Yes, Krishna protected me. And yes, I've moved on from it. And that's sort of the best possible situation we can hope to be in after a fall down, is to be where Jad Bharat is now, is in a state of sort of comfortable being able to say, yes, I've been through that, and I resurfaced, and I'm okay now, and Krishna is still protecting me. Your question. Yes, that's the challenge, right? That's the challenge, is because that's in fact one of the causes of fall down, is when we're not able to distinguish those two. Our confidence in the Lord or in the process of devotional service, which is 100% effective and amazingly powerful, translates into thinking, oh, I'm 100% effective myself and I'm amazingly powerful because I'm a devotee of the Lord. And that becomes basically a demoniac quality, right? So in Gita, Krishna describes the demon's quality as Ishwaroham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan sukhi. 100% confidence in his own abilities. That's the quality of a demon. And a devotee's quality is 100% confidence in Krishna's ability and not in his own. And so being able to distinguish those two things is actually the challenge in advancing in devotional service. That's the challenge of maintaining humility, basically, is saying, yes, Krishna may be so powerful, but still, I have to be very, very careful. Right? Like Prabhupada says, I pray every day that I may not fall in Maya. Because that feeling, that possibility is there for any living entity, right? Because we're so small. So realizing that, no, I'm very weak, and the only reason that I'm doing this is because Krishna's mercy is there, Krishna's grace is there. So sort of that consciousness, that mentality, Ainanda Tanuja Kingaram, right? That Muta Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavambuddha. Kripaya Tava Pada Pankaja Sitaduli Sadrisham Vichinde. The Lord is very kind, so I am a particle of dust at his feet. That's my sense of confidence, right? That I'm under his lotus feet. But at the same time, the point we have to remember is I was here, right? I'm at the bottom. I'm under Krishna's lotus feet because I'm so small, I'm so weak. And this is where a devotee's past can actually be very helpful. Right? If we think not just in terms of fall down, but we also think in terms of pre-devotee days. Right? Maybe earlier point in this lifetime, maybe previous lifetimes, but saying, look, a devotee's past can actually be a great asset in reminding a devotee that, okay, I'm not infallible. Right? That the minute we start thinking, we remember, say, oh, okay, hold on, I shouldn't get too confident here. Remember that happened? That was really embarrassing, wasn't it? okay, I better not let it happen again. So nectar devotion describes this emotion. It's called, what's it called? Ghastliness, right? Bhibhatsa. This emotion of ghastliness in the Lord's service. And one of the exhibitions of ghastliness in service, of bhibhatsa, is feeling a sense of remorse or horror at one's own past, right? Saying, oh, that was pretty bad what I went through. And sometimes, just sometimes, Krishna will give us a fall down of some kind just so we have that weapon in our arsenal. He's in fact giving us a gift by saying, now you can always remember this. Whenever you become too confident, just think about that time where you embarrass yourself in front of all the devotees by behaving in that way. It's a great asset, right? It's a tool for us to keep our head straight whenever it starts to float away and become too large. So that we can take shelter of our own past to sort of remind ourselves, okay, I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. And so both parts are important. He opened my eyes, but I was also born in the darkness of ignorance. And keeping both of those things together is that point, right? Skepticism about one's own ability. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but confidence in the mercy of the Lord. But my spiritual master is always there to open my eyes. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, see, with family members, things are a little bit different in that most of our association in our life we choose. But family is something that was chosen for us. So in the sense that Krishna recognizes the fact that these are people that we have been given as a result of our past karma, of our past deserving, whatever our heritage is. And so he realizes the fact that we have to live with that relationship, and we have to build it, and we have to maintain it. And however it is, we have to go. So in other words, that's something that, okay, unless we're taking sannyas and we're cutting ourselves off completely from that association. Even there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that, you know, for a number of family relationships, you can still maintain some connection. So there, we have to negotiate that association as best we can. In other words, we may engage in some of those six loving exchanges, because these are members of our family, right? And it becomes part of our duty is to help them, to take care of them. That's part of what dharma is all about, right? And on the other hand, part of their duty is to look after us. So there's a little bit more flexibility there in terms of, okay, we never want to risk our spiritual life, but at the same time, we don't have to give up our principles, but at the same time, we can engage in a more intimate way than we may say with colleagues at work or people out on the street. That's association that we choose, right? Everything from marriage onward, we choose, and that's our choice. So that's up to us to maintain that relationship or to give it up if it's becoming harmful. But family is something that's a little bit of a nebulous category, right? It's a place where there's some, you know, negotiation that needs to take place. Good question. I'm not 100% sure that he's not associating. And this is part of what I find very interesting in his discussion. A couple of things that I mentioned at the beginning of the class, that he's repeatedly praising the importance of association. And, I mean, we don't hear too much about Jad Bharata's life. This particular birth. We hear that he was completely unresponsive to materialistic public. And we hear that he was very engaged in preaching to Rahugana. That's all we know pretty much about Jad Bharata's life. But we can also deduce some things from his instructions. In other words, assuming the fact that he's a good devotee and he practices what he preaches, right? He's quite heavily emphasizing this point of importance of association. So that suggests that that's one of the lessons that he learned from his previous life, right? That from his first life, that was one place where I made a misstep, is I completely cut myself off from association. Notice when he becomes a deer also, what does he do there? He always hangs around devotees. He goes to the ashram of sages and eats and lives there. So in other words, again, I have to be near devotees. Last time I messed up because I isolated myself in the forest. But this time I'm not going to mess up. So he is very much sort of maintaining that conviction and presumably that practice of associating with devotees in this lifetime. And if the indication that he's preaching to Rahugana is any case, Rahugana is not a devotee again. So the fact that he's associating with Rahugana for preaching purposes suggests very strongly that he would have associated with the devotees of the Lord also. Yes, Monty. See, the thing is, devotees are very kind. This is one of the qualities of devotees. And the level of forgiveness that devotees show, if we look at it in a practical way, is far beyond what we'll find anywhere in this world. Most people, I mean, in the working world, for example, if you accidentally offend someone, even if it's accidentally, you offend someone or insult someone, or you cross them in some way at work, say, that person, you, there's a very good chance you'll lose them for the rest of your career at that place, wherever you're working. People have very little flexibility when it comes. But devotees are very kind. It's amazing how many times devotees and how much devotees will put up with because of this conviction that we have to associate with each other. Right? So whatever our nature is, we cannot give up the association of devotees. At the very least, we should find people who understand our nature and can interact with us appropriately, right? They sort of, understand, okay, this is the personality, this is the type of person we're working with, and this is the type of nature that they have, and this is, okay, I don't mind so much, right? At the very least, we should find devotees who understand us to some degree where they can accept our association without, you know, sort of becoming too agitated by our qualities. But giving up 100% is not good, because devotional service basically cannot be performed alone. Other processes can, but devotional service cannot. This Krishna says clearly in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Bodhayanta parasparam. The quality of bhakti is that you're there with others and you're conversing about me. It has to be done together, sankirtanam. Manohar Prabhu?
Or
That's a nice point. That's a nice point. There's no failure in spiritual life. There's no failure. Krishna, again, he makes that very clear. And the word setback is very nice. Right? There's only a setback. Now, Prabhupada even he says sometimes, he says temporary setback. Right? Sometimes there's a temporary setback, but no failure. No failure. We may slip, but we can always get up and keep walking. In other words, we don't land in the middle of the ocean again. Right? That much rope we have. Right, that thanks to the spiritual master, thanks to Prabhupada, thanks to Krishna, we've gotten that much rope that we may lose our footing. It's like the rock climber. We may lose our footing and we may fall, right, but we never hit the ground. That means death. And Krishna never allows that. He says, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat chantim nigachati. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pradashyati. My devotee never is vanquished. He never perishes. So Krishna doesn't allow that. So I that's a nice way to put it. Right? A setback in spiritual life. In Bhagavad Gita, you also see that Arjuna is very concerned with this. Right? Sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a process, Arjuna panics. He says, I can't do this. Krishna says, Krishna doesn't back down. He says, yeah, you can do it, just practice. And Arjuna still, he doesn't feel he should do it. So then he panics. He says, well, what do you do if you don't fail, if you don't do it? What if you fail? And then Krishna, he softens and he says, oh, you don't fail. You'll never lost. Right? So, I think we're out of time here. We're over time. So I apologize for the other questions. Maybe we can discuss afterwards. Thank you very much for your attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.